The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
Jonathan Seidel shares his messy journey of stumbling into alcohol addiction.
And so I tell people, like, it was a slow fade. You know, how many times have we said it or heard people say, oh man, I could really use a drink, right?
Yeah.
And that turned into one and two and five and 10. Yeah, you know, it just slowly stacked up.
Confessions of a Christian Alcoholic, next on Life Today.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. This is Tammy Trent.
Hello.
Do you enjoy pain? That's an odd question. That's a bad way to start a show, isn't it?
How do I answer pain? Do I enjoy pain? Yeah,
no,
I hate it. Pain is like, what kind? Like a heartbreak kind of pain?
Any kind.
You want to stick a needle in me and draw my blood? Hate it. So no, I don't like any pain.
Yeah, no, and we don't. None of us like pain. And you know, there's two ways we can go with that. One's good, one's not bad, but one's easy and one's hard. And we're going to talk about today. Our guest is Jonathan Seidel. He's the author of a book just out called Confessions of a Christian Alcoholic. And John joins us to explain a bit of that and to talk about the pain. Welcome.
Randy, thank you so much. It's great to be back here again. A lot has changed since I was here last time.
Well, okay, and see, I think that's one of the questions, because last time we had you on the program, and then this.
Yeah, right. And so last time, you know, I'm talking about mental health and faith, and it's a great conversation. And I kind of joked that, like, that was part one of my story. I didn't realize that was part one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I wrote that book. I had encountered a lot of hard times in life. And then I encountered even, the greatest hardship of my life. And I thought I was prepared for it, and I wasn't. And that's, in a sense, why we have this book.
Walk us through some of that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. You write a book, and I think a lot of people think, you know, oh my gosh, it's like the greatest experience in the world. And it is a great experience, right? But you pour out so much of yourself into a book. And I had a friend who had written a couple books, and he said, hey, you know, you need to be careful. You know, you're going to publish a book, and no matter what, you're going to feel a little let down. And sure enough, like, the book comes out and have great conversations, but I realized I also had unmet expectations, you know? That was really the first time the devil then started using that to whisper lies, you know? Lies and things that went back to even childhood. And that was the first domino to fall. The second domino was I had a business at the time where I was doing some consulting work, and I had secured an amazing consulting client. And then 2 weeks before Christmas, they come and they say, hey, we're going in a different direction. And I'm like, I have no other client. Like, what? And then you fast forward to the spring, and my son, four years old at the time, he starts just limping around. And we take him to the doctor, and, you know, it's kind of one of those, the initial appointment is he's fine. My wife's mama intuition says, no, he's not fine. You know, it's kind of like, before you know it, you're at Children's Hospital and you're meeting with an oncologist, and they're like, he's got a bone tumor. And while that did end up being benign, it was that process, you know, and finding out. And so I tell people, like, it was a slow fade. How many times have we said it or heard people say, oh man, I could really use a drink, right?
Yeah.
And that turned into one and two and five and 10. You know, it just slowly stacked up until May 2023. My wife and I go down to Miami. Our anniversary is around Memorial Day weekend. And so we always kind of have a 3-day weekend built in, and we go down, and she has this night where she says, hey, I just kind of want a night in. She's a reader, you know? And I'm like, she's like, you know, go do whatever you want. I was like, I was never a party drinker. I need a drink to escape. And what I would come to find out later is that ultimately my addiction is not to alcohol, but it's to escapism, right? And so that night I say, I'm just going to go down to the hotel bar. I'm going to, there was, you know, playoff, NBA playoff game. And she looks at me because by now it's starting, I think I'm hiding it really well.
Yeah, right.
And she still didn't know the full extent, but she's starting to realize it. And she looks at me as I'm leaving the hotel room and she says, don't get drunk.
Wow.
I said, I'm not going to get drunk. I was not planning on getting drunk. I go down to the hotel bar and the first drink turns into I don't know how many. Wow. By 1 a.m., I am drunk. And I'm like, I cannot go back. And so I stumble down to South Beach, Miami. And it's so interesting. I tell people, you don't realize how busy South Beach, Miami is at 1 a.m. All kinds of people.
I was going to say, you blended right in.
Yeah, doing all kinds of things. And I get down there, and pretty soon, after drinking so much, I have to go to the bathroom. And drunk John says, well, you've got the world's biggest toilet in front of you. And so I wade in with all my clothes on, and I start going to the bathroom. I'm neck deep. And I just have this moment of, like, I look up, and it's like, what has your life become? And that next day, my wife asked me about it, and I say it's kind of my Peter moment. I lie to her 3 times. And finally at dinner that night, I say, I am just a wreck. And I say, hey, babe, I got to let you know, like, I did get drunk last night. And she breaks down and she goes, I don't think you know what that does to a woman. So easily, so quickly. Like, what else could you be lying about? And I start making, you know, we pay our dinner bill. We walk down to the beach and I'm making all the promises. I'm never going to drink again. I know I need help. Like, something's wrong. And she looks at me and she says, John, I don't care if you never drink again. That's not my goal. If you never have another drop of alcohol, whatever. I need you to get to the root of why you're drinking the way you do, why you're turning to this. Because even if you never drink again and you don't do that, she's like, it's just going to be something else. And I kind of am like, can we go back to the not drinking part? Like, that would be easier. You know, because there was traumas from my childhood, things that had happened to me growing up, and just stuff that I never dealt with and didn't want to deal with. And, you know, but I looked at her and I said, okay. I pulled up a Christian trauma therapist that we had been talking about. I literally typed in, and I include this in the book, the actual email that I sent. I type it up and say, hey, I think I got some issues that I need to work through. I'm coming back from Miami. When can I see you? And that started the healing process.
So what your wife said has so much insight that I don't want people to miss it. Because, you know, when I open talking about pain, we don't like pain. We all like to escape the pain somehow. But in a lot of arenas, even in church arenas, we go for the behavior modification. Right? And then we become people who, well, we don't do those things that are destructive. And so we go, oh, well, it's good. But that root.
It's so important. And you know, I think that's why even I say this to people, and some people, like, look at me weird. I'm like, you know, people who come to me with a problem and they're like, I need to stop drinking. And I'm like, okay. And I, you know, we talk, and then I finally, I'm like, I don't want you to be sober. The goal is Jesus. Because when the goal is Jesus, that's when he can heal and root out. You know, I talk about the parts of ourselves in the book. Like, if you think about it, like, we're all made up of different parts. It's kind of like that movie Inside Out. And it's like, there are parts of ourselves that we give to Jesus. The healthy parts of me wrote a best-selling book on faith and mental health, and that was great. But then there were these other parts of myself that Satan started whispering to me about, you know, starting in the fall of 2021. Those parts, I'm not talking about that. I'm not, I'm keeping that hidden and buried, right? And those are the parts that you drink away. I knew that if I was finally gonna, like, get it to the point where I knew it needed to be, I needed to do something different. And it wasn't just getting sober. Mm-hmm. It was inviting Jesus into those parts of myself that I had hidden and buried. Mm. And once I invited him into those parts, that's when I got sobriety thrown in.
Right.
You know, it's like the C.S. Lewis, you know, quote. I love C.S. Lewis. Name my son after him. You know, in Mere Christianity, he says, you know, aim for heaven and you'll get the earth thrown in. Mm-hmm. Aim for Jesus and you'll get sobriety thrown in. So many times we aim for sobriety and it's like, right, maybe you white knuckle it for a little bit. Yeah. I met a guy last week, 22 years, he white knuckled sobriety. Mm. Mm. And then when he couldn't white knuckle it anymore, it led to 17 years of pain of going back to the bottle. Mm. You know, when I speak on this, I ask the audience, I say, like, who here knows a miserable sober person? And, you know, they bus AA groups and people in to hear me talk, and they raise their hand. And I'm like, great. Guess what? The world applauds them. The world says, as long as you're sober, it's good.
Right?
And the message that I'm trying to bring to people now is, I don't want you just sober.
Yeah.
I want you having the most fulfilled, flourishing life, right?
Yep.
That then sobriety can't help, but be there, right? So aim for Jesus, you'll get sobriety thrown in. Yes. Aim for heaven, and you'll get the earth thrown in.
So you talk about root, okay? And you getting to the root. Were you always aware that there is something here, and I'm trying to escape it? Because I think that there are people that also feel like, do I have a root problem?
Yeah.
I've had things in my own life. Yeah. I've written a new book, and in part of it, even going through some things, I talked about walking into my marriage, not realizing I had a root problem in this area of my life, and it affected the early years of my marriage because I was unaware that I had a root problem. So how was yours? I mean, did you always feel like you had one, or did you have to find it? Like, let me dig through all of this to find, there it is, now I can address it.
Yeah, so I think it's a both and, right? Is that I'm sure in early parts of your marriage, there were little triggers, there were little hints of it, right?
Yes.
Maybe your husband would say something or something would happen and you just start reacting a certain way, right? Now, that's a hint that there's something below the surface. But so many times we treat the symptom, right? Mm. So for me, it's like I was getting those little indicators, but I would always, you know, in a sense, treat those symptoms, right? And listen, symptom treatment can work.
Mm-hmm.
It can work, right? But then when you hit the hardest point in your life, when all those things start going, when after 13 years of marriage, you know, it's like you can't just like live off of the feeling of the wedding vows. And for some people that takes 6 years and some it's 26, right? Like you start realizing, oh my goodness, there is something bigger and deeper here. And so for me, I started finally paying attention to some of those things and realizing there's something greater here. Mm-hmm. I've tried this way to deal with it. I've tried this way to deal with it. I've gone to therapy and counseling and you know what I mean?
Yes,
and it's just like, this keeps coming up.
Yes.
Right.
Things keep happening, right? I'm still trying to you know, this conversation leads to me feeling this way. And then it's just really easy to like, I just want to have a drink.
Yeah.
Right. That's a lot easier
than
trying to be like, let me sit with this for a second and think, you know
what
I mean?
I don't want to sit with this. I want to escape it. I don't want a solution. Right. I don't want to fix it. I'm upset. I'm offended. I'm just done. Give me a drink. Yeah.
Right.
And that's probably where you were. You found yourself every single time.
Right.
I love that you broke free, brother.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you still struggle?
Yes and no, right? Mm. There are some people who miraculously, they never have a, you know, they smell alcohol and it, you know, probably makes them want to throw up, right?
Mm.
Praise God for that.
Mm-hmm.
But because my ultimate addiction is really to escapism, it's like this side of heaven, I don't think that's ever going away. Like, I'll have a tough conversation with my wife. I'll have a tough season with my kids. And it's like, I want to escape that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and guess what? Alcohol is a cheap, easy way to do that, right? You know, and I'm not the first person to say that. It's like, alcohol wasn't my problem. alcohol was the solution
that's
to my
right,
problems.
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it becomes a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's,
exactly.
That's right. The way
and
it
then
all works.
There's
yes.
physical, you know, it's like I would always play the comparison game and say, well, you know, I'm not acting like this or I'm not
right.
feeling this way, you know, and then you stop drinking. You're like, oh, just because I didn't have the shakes, I guess I did have some alcohol withdrawal symptoms.
Yes.
You know? So the physical aspect kicks in. But so in that sense, I still struggle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not that I'm sitting here thinking I could really go for a drink right now, but the escapism is
Do you have a yard?
Yeah.
Do you mow your yard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have weeds?
Yes.
Did you know, perhaps you know this, I discovered this years ago, if you mow often enough, the weeds will look okay.
Yeah.
Your neighbors won't file a complaint against you.
It just looks like the grass.
But until you get, I asked a guy who had a nice yard one time, how do you have such a nice yard? And he's like, no, you got to get the weeds out by the roots.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And what? But that's hard work.
Oh.
And what I hear you saying, and tell me if I'm hearing you right, is that no matter what the issue is, if you're just mowing the yard, you're just surfacing it, it's always going to come back. You got to get the root. Is that what I'm, am I hearing you right?
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's a whole chapter in the book called Root versus Fruit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so are you going to get to the root, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the easy way is to just mow it,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Even take, you know, sometimes you can even just get weed killer, right? But but you really need that stuff
you
that,
gotta,
again,
you, you
gets down to the root,
you do,
right?
You do. I know that for me. It's frustrating. Yeah, you got to get to
and
it.
And there are a lot of people, don't you think, Randy and John, that are struggling with something.
Something.
Your book, when I think about this, is it just for somebody struggling with alcoholism? Who'd you write it for? Is it for maybe a family that they're watching someone struggle with some kind of escapism and this would help them to understand? Mm. Or is it really just for the person that needs to find breakthrough in their life?
So it's definitely for all of those, right?
Okay.
So obviously the person who finds themselves struggling with alcohol, but I also talk to people as like, you may think, oh, I don't think my relationship with alcohol is bad, right?
Is that a big sin?
Right.
Is that the worst sin?
Right. And I
think?
Would encourage you to read chapter 2 in the book. And I'm not out here, you know, it's funny, I had someone who didn't like the book, shocker, say, you know, you're just trying to convince everyone that they're an alcoholic and you don't want anyone to drink. I said, neither of those things are true, right? But here's what people don't understand. Anything that is misordered in your life is disordered, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I love that.
Especially as Christians, it is not about quantity. Even the world right now changed the definition of alcoholism in 2013 and how they diagnose it. It's not about quantity. Quantity is a factor, but it's one of many factors, right? So what I tell people is, if you want to try to figure out if there's something misordered in your life, or if you keep butting up against certain things in your life, like, the book is going to help you, right?
It's good. Yeah.
It's going to help as
yes.
well the family members who want to understand it. And I say, like, it's Confessions of a Christian Alcoholic, but you could put alcoholism is just the vehicle
mm-hmm.
for any of those misordered, disordered
mm-hmm. yeah.
things in our life. So maybe it's Confession of a Christian, you know, scroller, right? Someone that's always on the
right.
phone, or your issue is food or work. Or your kids, or your spouse, or this one, your ministry.
Mm.
How many pastors are out there that even their wives mm-hmm. will joke, he's married to the church.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we think, oh, well, that's an okay one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
That's an okay one.
That's a good medication.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But again, anything that is misordered is disordered.
Yeah, that's so true.
Good.
That's true.
Yeah.
So when you talk about getting to the root, it's interesting because that's what we try to do in our mission outreaches, because there are a lot of great things we can do to help people. And we've seen some success. But Tammy, we know it's a spiritual root.
It is, Randy, and we have had the privilege to be able to go into some incredibly dark places,
mm-hmm.
but seeing the light of Jesus just push mm-hmm. through it all and bring life to these children, especially. I just came back from Southeast Asia, and I cannot tell you how life-changing a trip like that is for me, but I cannot express how much we need you to come alongside
That's
us
right.
to continue this great mm-hmm. and mighty life-changing work of God all around the world. Please take a minute and watch this carefully. Watch this, and then we'll come out on the other side and wrap it up with John.
Children should be protected, nurtured, and be able to live in a safe environment. But there is a dark and evil presence that shatters that reality for literally millions of children. It's called sex trafficking.
These are kids that are forced to work all sorts of hours of the night and day. These are kids that have been forced to have sex with people, and they're being abused, and they're being photographed, and doing things that no child should ever have to do.
To combat this evil force, Life Outreach has partnered with ministries who are committed to reaching, rescuing, and restoring the lives of children and young girls who have been trafficked. Recently, Tammy Trent and John Yates visited our beautiful Life Center in Southeast Asia. It is a safe haven for children, many of whom have suffered at the hands of child predators. Our team had a chance to play with the children and to join them in their praise and worship. While at our Life Center, John and Tammy learned how the healing process begins for children who have suffered the horrors of being trafficked.
So as you can see over my shoulder, Tammy is in a room with a caregiver and a child. But this is not just any room. This is a very special room for children that have suffered the trauma of child sex trafficking. These children are brought into this safe place where they will be able to tell their stories to a therapist that has built trust over weeks of periods of time. And those children's stories will be able to be utilized to bring justice inside of a trauma that no child should ever have to face. Because of your generosity, we've been able to build some of the most state-of-the-art facilities that are tools in the hands of missionaries to bring healing and hope and restoration to the heart of a child that has suffered in a way that no human should ever have to suffer.
There are thousands of children who are suffering right now at the hands of sex predators, and we need your help to continue our work of reaching, rescuing, and restoring the lives of these precious ones.
You know, it's an amazing outreach, an amazing work, and it's only possible because of viewers like you. But Tammy, I want to ask you, what's it like to sit with a child that you know that has been so abused?
Gosh, Randy, when I watched these stories back, of course, we said it takes me right back there. And I remember being in that room with that little girl. There's such an interesting emotional feeling that I get. Yeah. It's almost sometimes of anger, to be honest with
Absolutely.
You, just like, who did this to you? Mm-hmm. Who did this to you? And you see the innocence of this precious little girl you saw in that room where I just got to play with her for the longest time. And we had shells and sand in that box. But to see her coming back to life again because of the atmosphere that she was in of healing, safety, protection. Mm-hmm. It's a hard place for me to be because I cannot believe and I'm so upset that they're even there.
Yeah.
But I know how effective this ministry is, and I know that it is turning things around. And so in that sense, I can sort of, I'm carrying tension with me. So I can feel the hope and I know it's real.
Yeah, and you know, the reality is we know who does this to children, ultimately on a spiritual level. This is straight out of the pit of hell.
Yes, it is.
My question is who's going to restore them? And we know the answer is Jesus Christ. But you know, it's interesting because God always sends his people to do his work on this earth. And that's what this outreach is. For those that we can prevent them from ever being in a position like that little girl is, we want to reach them.
Yes.
For those that are in that situation, we want to rescue them. Mm-hmm. And for those like this young girl that have been horribly, horribly traumatized, we want to restore them.
Yes.
That is the work of Rescue Life, and that work only takes place when you join us. A gift of $128 right now will help start that process of reaching, rescuing, or restoring that child. Some of you can reach 10 children, maybe even many more. All of you can be a part of completing this beautiful facility that we want to raise there in Southeast Asia to house more of these, mainly girls, but some boys too. This is the last week we'll be on the air talking about this. So please, will you join with us right now to build something special? I'm a father. I'm now a grandfather of a little girl. I would do anything, anything to get one of my children out of that situation,
to
restore them.
Yes.
Anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm just a human father. God's a good father. He wants to restore them.
Amen.
But he wants you to be a part of it. So please, go online, go to the phone, make the best gift you can. We can rescue these children. We can show them the love of God. They can be restored. Do it today.
Innocent children longing to be loved and cared for are being abducted and sold into the evil industry of human trafficking. Through Mission Rescue Life, your gift today of only $128 will help reach, rescue, or restore a child and change their destiny forever. Gifts of $64 or $32 will be combined with support from others to help rescue one more child from the shame and pain of sexual slavery. Currently, our life rescue centers in Southeast Asia are at maximum capacity. More space is urgently needed, and we must complete and renovate a new rescue home immediately. Please consider a very special extra gift, as we urgently need $1.25 million above our normal budget to complete and renovate this place of hope. With a gift of any amount, we'll send you power, provision, and peace, bringing together the life-changing truths of Acts, Romans, and 1st and 2nd Corinthians in the Passion Translation. These books come alive with fresh revelation and timeless power. With your gift of $128 or more, you'll receive the beautiful and soft Perfect Peace blanket, bearing the words of Isaiah 26:3 as a meaningful reminder that those who trust in the Lord are never alone. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,280, which will help save 10 children. And you may request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Lion of Judah. This is the last week. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
We do appreciate your support because we desperately need your support. This is the last week we will be on the air talking about it. And by the way, if you want someone to pray with you, whatever it is that you haven't gotten to the root of, we have a prayer line that's for you because, yes, we care about people in desperate need around the world. We care about you as well. So feel free to call that number. Someone will gladly pray with you. It's been such a good conversation.
It is a good conversation. John, thank you so much for being here and for confessing. I love it. Like, I love the book. Where can people find it? Where can they find you?
Yeah, that confessing aspect, right? There's four steps that I took to break free, and that's one of them. And so they can go to see the book and the podcast and all that stuff. They can go to christianalcoholic.com.
I love
it. Yeah, christianalcoholic.com made it easy.
You're at home privately, like, Googling. I love it. You've been a blessing to us today. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for being here. We'll see you next time on Life Today. Bye-bye. To call on the only one you need when you feel cold. I'll be your everything. I'll share your every tear.
He is faithful if you'll wait on God. He is faithful to counsel, to comfort, to lead, and to remind you of the words of Jesus.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.